Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, campus protests over Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza and universities' response to them have attracted international attention.
This movement, this encampment that is happening not just on Berkeley's campus, but across the world with 120 universities is making a difference.
Months after it began, the movement shows no signs of slowing down, even as the school year comes to an end. We'll talk with student journalists at two of the most high-profile campuses in California, UC Berkeley, where the free speech movement began in the 1960s, and UCLA, where violence from counter-protesters last week triggered a violent confrontation. We'll hear what it's been like for these student journalists to cover the protests, led mostly by their peers, on a topic they themselves might feel strongly about. Joining me first is Hussein Khan. He's a student at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. Hussein, thanks for being here.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me begin just big picture. Give us a sense of what is the situation now at Berkeley. Describe the pro-Palestinian encampment there. What's it like?
Sure. So this encampment has going on for about 2 weeks. It's quite large. Last time I was there on the weekend, they said they had over 100 tents, maybe 150. And actually on the weekend, they expanded to even have an alumni village. And I saw that live as it was happening. So now even alumni have camped out. The atmosphere, I'd say, is pretty peaceful. It's pretty serene. It's very well organized. I saw a tent that they had a kitchen.
Yeah, would you like some or just a Bollinger?
Serving people meal and donations. And they had on a piece of just poster sign-up sheets for cleaning. There's a free library there.
We call it Liberation Library. So we have a collection of books that people have donated here.
Like I said, it's very multicultural. I saw tents that said, Filipinos for Palestine, Hindus against hate. I know there's a strong Jewish presence there, and people during Shabbat were singing a Seder. So that's the atmosphere.
Very international.
It's very international. In terms of the negotiations, so just on May 5th, the Daily Cal reported that there is some movement. The encampment is negotiating over divestment. That's their main demand. And the ASUC, which is the student government, they actually passed a divestment resolution. It's not binding upon the regents. But yeah, a lot has happened over the past few weeks.
And what goes on there? You mentioned Shabbat dinners and drinking wine, but what happens there during the day? What goes on at night? Have you been there, I assume, both day and night?
Yeah. So during the day, there's a variety of programs. There's teach-ins, there's speeches. I mentioned it's pretty international. I was there and I saw a teach-in by Latino students who were drawing connections to some of their struggles and the Palestinian struggle. People practice their religion there. There's a very small area for Muslims to practice their ritual prayers. But mostly it's also students being students. I saw people just studying and I asked them like, hey, how are you being a student during this time? They said, well, we get our Wi-Fi from Sproul.
This is the middle of final season. Berkeley, it's called Dead Week.
We go to the libraries that are open late for the bathroom and people donate us food. So it's also very mundane in some sense.
So I mentioned that, class is coming to an end. There's graduation for seniors. Do you get a sense that this is going to continue during the summer?
I don't know. I've asked that question and it feels like it's pending the negotiations that the encampment is having with the university. But one of the organizers did tell me that they will probably still do actions during the fall, depending on the situation.
There's been a lot of media coverage. You're covering it as a journalism student. And I'm wondering, what do you think the media writ large has missed or gotten wrong?
It's funny. I was thinking about this coming into this interview, and I saw this tweet by Dana Bush from CNN talking about how the protests on campus are incredibly violent. they're making Jewish students feel unsafe. And she was comparing it to the 1930s, which was, I thought, very striking.
Nazi Germany?
Yeah, 1930s. I believe she didn't say Nazi Germany, but she said 1930s in the tweet. And I thought that was so not the experience, at least I had, being there, because of how diverse it was. And I feel like there's a long history, and if people are curious, they can look into the work of journalists like Mona Shalaby or a researcher at Berkeley named Holly Jackson. There's a long history of anti-Palestinian bias in the media. So being a student journalist, I feel in this moment I have to be very attentive to that and try to, while not being partisan, represent the Palestinian people in a dignified way. I've been trying to report on the mental health of Palestinian students because there's a lot of coverage on college protests, on the feelings of Jewish students, all valid topics. But I never saw an article talk about this basic fact that if you have family, particularly in Gaza and the West Bank, how are you navigating school? So I did a story for Calix Radio on that.
You mentioned that there are some Jewish students as part of the encampments who are sympathetic to the cause for Palestinians. At the same time, on some campuses, some of the Jewish students have said that they feel unsafe. Have you personally seen anything or heard anything like that?
I have not seen anything, specifically because it feels like Berkeley is a pretty diverse place and there's a strong Jewish presence in the encampment. There are some tensions. I know that last Wednesday, there was a small clash between protesters and counter-protesters. It wasn't clear to me whether it was from people actually at the camp. And I was there 2 weeks ago on Friday, and there was a man who was yelling at the campers. So I personally have not seen anti-Semitism, but I do think there are some tensions on campus.
Well, I know you've been talking to these students and interviewing some of them, and I want to play a little bit of tape from a student named Izzy, and we're using just first names here for, you know, just to keep them safe, and that was their preference, and we're fine with that. Izzy is a Jewish student, and let's just hear a little bit about what they had to say.
Jewish faith teaches us that all life is sacred, and B'Tselem Elohim, that all people are made in the eyes of God, and that includes Palestinians, and that every life is sacred, and the funding of the genocide that is happening right now is against any and all of my Jewish values.
Hussein, I'm wondering if you're seeing any kind of conversations happening between Jewish and Muslim or Palestinian students at the encampment.
I do think there is that camaraderie for sure. I personally did not see people. Actually, no, there was one interaction I did see that was pretty beautiful, which is last Friday they had a group prayer. And while the Muslim students were praying, you had this, again, like multiracial coalition, including people wearing, their Jewish religious adornment, the yarmulkes, I believe, protecting the Palestinian and Muslim and Arab students while they prayed, and then people chatting after. So that was something that really struck out to me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What is your sense of how the university at UC Berkeley and the Regents, that they're handling this? And has that evolved? Has it changed over time?
I think the university, and this is, I personally think the university hasn't been doing a great job because I've been following the emails. And one of the core complaints of the encampment is, end the silence. We feel like the university hasn't been really naming Palestinian pain and suffering. And so I remember there was a controversial speaker that came to campus at Zellerbach Hall. The protests got there pretty rowdy. The university strongly condemned that protest. But what wasn't mentioned in any of the emails I thought was very striking was that this person was an IDF soldier, right?
Israeli Defense Force.
Yes. So now someone may argue that still doesn't justify the protest being rowdy, but I thought, well, this is a pretty important contextual clue for why some people might feel very upset. And this person had made, controversial and racist statements before. So I think, I think it is changing because my sense from the protesters is they feel optimistic. And on May 5th, the Daily Cal reported that negotiations are moving, perhaps not to a full divestment, but at least some of the demands will be met.
Well, you mentioned that the students at Berkeley and elsewhere are asking for divestment. And let's listen to another student. This is an Arab American named Hamza talking about this issue.
Number one, as students, we want to hold our university responsible. Those are the people that are closest to us, who we have most say over. Our tuition dollars are going to Israel, and we want to prevent that from happening. Obviously, people are also going out and protesting lawmakers and going out and lobbying and doing all these things to put pressure on the whole system that is supporting this genocide. But we feel as students that the first priority is to get our own school to be on the right side of history.
Hussein, you know, these issues are, I feel like a grown-up saying this, but they're complicated, you know, and divestment, the issue of divestment, you know, getting a university or any organization to pull out investments, you know, when you're investing in, say, mutual funds that are investing in dozens or hundreds of companies, like, say, Google or, companies that, you know, students use, we all use, you know, to get to study, to get through the day, whatever. Like, I'm just wondering, like, do you feel like there is a hard and fast divest period, or is there some compromise or some understanding, do you think, of the complexity of the issue?
Yeah, so this is pretty multifaceted because what is really being asked for is divestment from the endowment fund. And it's really not clear what funds from the endowment are tied to Israeli companies. It is true that the UC endowment has a relationship with BlackRock, and BlackRock invests in many companies, including weapons manufacturing. That's a big target for the students. I think a more feasible goal, which is acknowledged in the UCB divestment coalition statement, is that there are certain partnerships the university has. So, for example, the Haas Business School has a relationship with HPE, Hewlett-Packard, you know, HP Computers, and they, I'm not sure if it's still the case, but until very recently, at least, they had a contract with the IDF to give some of their technology for the biometric ID system that's used for the checkpoints that monitor and control Palestinian movement. So those types of relationships, perhaps those are feasible to end or boycott, or doing academic boycotts. But with the endowment fund, it's pretty complicated.
Well, let's hear from another student you spoke to. A student named Zaid said they've been to protests before, but this one is a little bit different.
For the bulk of my life, when I've been to Palestinian protests, whether it be in 2014, whether it be 2021, it was primarily Muslims and Arabs leading at the protest. There'd be a small minority of like leftists and people who are just really concerned about the conditions of the people of Gaza who would join us. But this is the first time we're seeing that the movements are not only being supported, but being led by non-Arabs and non-Muslims, people who just care so much about the Palestinians, who got educated so much in the last few months that they're willing to take charge, that they're willing to put their bodies on the lines and their careers on the lines for Palestinians.
You know, the current war, I realize this situation in some form or fashion has been going on for decades, but this moment we're in now, this war in Gaza, was triggered on October 7th by what Hamas did going into Israel, killing students, kidnapping people, mutilating, you know, all the horrible things. And I'm wondering, do you feel at all like that has been forgotten, or is Hamas in some way what happened being given a pass in some way?
I don't think that's the case, because especially when you go to events, at least in the Bay Area that I've been to, Jewish less events, for example, Jewish Voice of Peace, they do acknowledge that pain. But I think the reason why people are focused on Israel, and what I heard from the students, is that we're American citizens. They are. I'm Canadian. We're American citizens. Our taxpayers are going towards it. And, you know, I asked one of the students this question, and he said that, well, I can't just call up Hamas and be like, hey, quit doing that. But I can do that with my elected officials and their relationship with Israel.
One of the big questions, of course, is how is all this going to affect the election in November, in particular the presidential election, but, you know, potentially down ballot as well. And I want to go back to Izzy, the student we heard from earlier, talking about that.
I think partially the reason why I'm voting for third party is to put pressure onto the Democratic Party. I voted for the Democratic Party in the past, but I think voting third party is to show that we have a voice and that we want to be listened to. And if the Democrats are not willing to listen to my voice and the voice of many other people on Israel, on many topics, then we won't vote for them.
Well, I'm wondering, do you think that attitude is going to continue no matter what happens? Like what could happen between now and November that might change, folks like Izzy's mind?
Yeah, I'm personally not sure, again, just being Canadian, coming from a different political context. But one thing I have heard, and I've also heard one of my peers at the journalism school, Amaria Alvarez, she did a story about this, about young voters with regards to Palestine and what's happening in Gaza. It seems like some voters, they voted uncommitted in the primaries, but they will still vote Democrat, young people, just to show their displeasure over how this issue is being handled by President Biden. But some people, for them, even if they might vote Democrat later down the line, they're not going to support Trump, they still will not vote Joe Biden because they feel like if they did, they would be essentially rewarding or giving free pass to his conduct.
All right, we are going to continue our conversation in just a moment. We're going to be joined by another student journalist from UCLA. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Outdoor Supply Hardware, inviting listeners to Osh's big anniversary sale celebration, May 20th through the 26th, featuring daily deals, $15,000 in giveaways, 20% off store-wide on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot more. Learn more at osh.com.
Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul, for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles. The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We're hearing the perspective of student journalists covering the protests and counter-protests over Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza with Hussein Khan from the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. And joining us now is Christopher Buchanan. He is part of the CalMatters College Journalism Network, where he's covering the protests for the Daily Bruin, which is the campus paper at UCLA. Chris, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So you've been listening to my conversation with Hussein. Anything jump out to you in terms of what's different where you are at UCLA?
Yeah, definitely, especially the since the encampment's still ongoing at UC Berkeley. The fallout from UCLA's own encampment has been quite profound. A lot of students are being detained for, you know, protesting on campus in the fallout of the protest. All classes have been moved online. So campus has been very eerie walking around, talking to students. A lot of it is coming from Students for Justice of Palestine at UCLA, who are continuing their resistance, especially to the treatment of students. And I feel like that's more so what the protests are concerning at this point. While Palestine's still, you know, the most prominent issue that's facing students, they're also now facing, you know, brutality from police.
And you've been covering this before the violence broke out last week, I assume?
Yeah, generally.
What's been your experience there?
It was until the actual May 2nd, where, you know, the mass arrest happened, and the night before where the counter protests really flared up, it was pretty normal. A lot of students were pretty generally positive about the way things were going. Up until a lot of counter protesters, most of whom were just from the surrounding area of Westwood and not really students, started provoking a lot of the protests. That's when things started to really break out and become aggressive.
And my understanding from the reporting is that that group of outside counter protesters were part of a pro-Israel organization that funded what they were doing. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, they raised over $50,000. And I think that's the fund that they used to buy the large speaker that they placed in front of the encampment that they were using to play videos and audio to provoke, I would say.
And, you know, there's been a lot of criticism from Governor Newsom and others as to, you know, why did it take so long for police to come in, for there to be any security? You know, there was a melee. It looked like a riot on the videos I saw. Do you have any sense, like, what are you hearing as to why the police law enforcement presence was so slow?
Well, originally, Gene Block and the administration at UCLA actually denied the request for the LAPD at first. And up until the protests really broke out on the night of May 1st, the police weren't allowed on campus. It was mostly run by a private security company that had been hired by UCLA.
And when the violence broke out, where were you? And, you know, what?
I was just on the outside of the encampment. Up until the end of the night, probably at about 4 a.m., things were pretty generally okay. I was standing on the side of the Israeli counter-protesters to get videos as they tried to dismantle the barricade and as they were, you know, pulling students out from the encampment. And, you know, there was a lot of combat there. But as I was walking back to the Daily Bruin office to collect my notes and, you know, share videos with my coworkers, a group of adult men came up to us and approached us and were antagonizing my editor, calling out her name, poking and prodding at her and trying to form a line in front of us. And after a few traded insults and, you know, talk back and forth, I was attacked by about 4 to 6 grown men. And they, you know, they pulled me into the middle of the street. They were punching and kicking me for about a minute. And I believe, I won't say what happened exactly, but I think Catherine was also injured by those same men.
And was it clear to them that you're a student reporter?
Oh, yes. We were all walking in a line. It was most of us doing the reporting, and they were specifically calling out to Catherine because she's had a very high profile being on the ground.
And Catherine is?
Catherine Hamilton, Daily Bruin news editor.
So I'm wondering, you know, what is it like for you as a student? You're covering these protests, and I'll ask both of you, first you, Chris. You know, in many cases, I mean, UCLA is a big, big school, so I don't know, maybe you don't know personally some of the folks that are protesting, but, you know, talk about that, the relationships that you have, and whether you know some of the people there, and, you know, how that affects your ability as a journalist to cover it objectively.
Yeah, a lot of the students that were actually in the encampment are friends of mine or acquaintances or people I know. So it's been really difficult, especially in balancing my own perspective against, you know, I guess the broader perspective of how the conflict is going. I would say in terms of navigating interviews and other things, it's been pretty simple to get people to talk up until the detainment started happening. But yeah, it's been a very difficult, you know, situation to balance, especially considering that many of the students facing the violence are people that I've known in the last 3 years of my studies.
On the one hand, it's incredibly powerful and important experience to have as a journalist. But I'm wondering, like, what do you think of objectivity? What does objectivity look like for you in a situation like this?
Yeah, I think to an extent, I really did try to come into the situation in a very objective manner. Of course, I read news stories and I have my own opinions, but I was giving a fair chance to both the counter-protesters and the protesters while I was reporting. I was speaking to a lot of counter-protesters, asking them what the situation was, but it seemed I couldn't get really a collective answer that was, you know, concrete as much as I could with the students that were giving me reports from the pro-Palestinian side.
Hussein, what about you? And to first about knowing people in the encampment, I assume some of them are your friends, acquaintances, and, you know, how do you navigate that as a journalist?
Yeah, I've only had one acquaintance who I knew on a personal level prior to be at the encampment. For me, it's more, you know, I'm not Arab, I'm not Palestinian, but I am Muslim, so, you know, I do belong to some of the overlapping communities, and, you know, when the encampments have their prayers, you know, I'll join the prayers as an observant Muslim, but as a journalist, I won't join into the protest. You know, I won't chant with them and things like that. So it is somewhat emotionally affecting, you know, because you might go to the mosque or a community gathering and maybe not be friends with, but you know a student who has family there. And even just on the act of reporting on strangers who I don't know, these students, particularly the Palestinian students who have family in Gaza, you know, it's hard not to be affected by what you hear. And I ran into a prominent AJ Plus journalist after Friday prayers, and we were talking about this. And, you know, I talked about how, for me, it's very important to document what's happening to Palestinian communities here. I don't know if that'll make a difference in how those communities are treated. But as a Muslim, there's a concept of being like a witness to truth. And one of God's names in the Quran is Al-Haq, which means literally the truth. In terms of objectivity, you know, I've been talking a lot about this with my editors and my mentors, the professors at Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism, and how, you know, I have some of a struggle of that. And they said, listen, you might not be able to be objective. And some of them said that, you know, don't even aim to be objective, aim to be fair, right? Have objectivity in your method and be truthful and be balanced. Because I'm not sure if it is possible for journalists to be objective, and especially at Berkeley Journalism, you know, we have an investigative reporting program. They want us to report on corrupt politicians and environmental disasters. So they do want us to have standpoints and a moral compass, but it's about, I think, objectivity of method is what I try to hold on to.
Let me ask you both, starting with you, Chris, like, what do you feel like you've learned as a journalist covering this?
Most importantly, I would say safety. That's been the one thing that I feel like has been really emphasized, especially after the incident that happened on the 2nd or the night of the 2nd. And I think it's just been a very valuable learning experience just in terms of figuring out how to really capture the emotions and, you know, the perspective of students on the ground.
And that issue of safety, you know, we here at KQED, we have gotten training if we cover wildfires or, you know, protests, things where there could be some physical danger. Did you, as a student journalist, get anything like that?
Yeah, they definitely, especially with both publications, they gave us a very general oversight of, you know, how that would look like when I was introduced to both of them. But I do think that this event will set a precedent for college journalists because, as we've seen on campuses across the country, it doesn't guarantee you a position of safety.
Hussein, what about you? What do you feel like you've learned? What's been the hardest part for you?
Before I answer that, I just want to say quickly that I really admire people like Chris and student journalists who are in these unsafe situations, including, you know, peers at Columbia Journalism, and they've been doing amazing work. In terms of what I've learned, you know, sourcing is really hard. And part of that is, you know, some communities, particularly, I think I've seen this in the Arab community, Palestinian community, it's taken time to get people to open up because these communities have been surveilled upon, face a lot of discrimination, and some of them feel like the media has been complicit in that. There was a report, actually, I was reading from the Pew Research Center. This is a report from January that about half Americans apparently don't know which side has lost more civilians in this conflict, which may point to the media's role in how this issue is covered. And so for that reason, a lot of these communities, which we have to report on, distrustful of the media. And I think it's worthwhile for journalists to reflect on that and to engage with people in humility and take time to earn their trust.
And what impact do you think you're having, if any?
I don't know if I'm having an impact. Honestly, I think about that all the time, especially starting out in journalism. But I feel like it's worth reporting. You know, I'm mostly focusing on the experience of Palestinian students because I feel like that's been neglected, and working on a long form piece talking to Palestinian students all over the country. I feel like for me, even if I don't have an impact, it's just about trying to maintain integrity. And if people ask me in 20, 30 years, like, what did you do as a student journalist? I can say, well, at least I tried to listen to some people and report on their experiences.
Yeah, there's an old expression that journalism is the first draft of history, which it real must feel like that you're really, like you said, this is historic.
Yeah, I hope so.
Chris, what about you? What impact do you feel like you're having, if any?
I feel like even if I haven't had an impact at all, I completely agree. I feel like it only does service to the people who are really on the ground and really experiencing the violence firsthand in Palestine. So I believe that, you know, as a college journalist, it's the least I could do is to get some student voices in and, you know, I guess bring a light to a lot of the opinions that I would say a majority of Americans at this moment do have.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both very much. Chris Buchanan, a student fellow for the CalMatters College Journalism Network at UCLA. Thanks so much. And writing for the Daily Bruin. Appreciate it. Stay safe out there.
Thank you so much.
And thanks also to Hussein Khan with the UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
All right, that is a wrap for Wednesday, May 8th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. Special thanks to Hussein Khan for collecting the tape you heard in today's show. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
You ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles? The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.